down our country man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a wheel of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down our country man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a wheel of life, we're fighting. This song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country halls, you're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, I'm traveling now in the mountains of British Columbia. I've been on a speaking tour. I recorded a great video on Sunday with Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson. She's a television religious commentator, was a political candidate for the People's Party of Canada in a by-election last spring. She got 11% of the vote, which is very, very good for a party just out of the blocks. She ran again for the party in Red Deer in the October election. She's a very dynamic Christian lady. I've been talking about her. I'll be talking about her more. But anyway, moved a little bit further into the interior of British Columbia, and I pulled into a gas station yesterday, and there on the door, the glass door you take to go into the gas station, there's a sign, and the sign advises, ring loudly, maybe, and we'll let you in. No, wait a sec. Oh, yeah, in British Columbia, of course, because the cops refuse to enforce the law. You have to pay in advance. This really annoys me. You have to pay for your gas in advance. Now, most people, if you have a credit card, you put the credit card into the gas dispensing machine, in the gas pump, and you set it for a limit, let's say $60. And then you gas up, and you know it will dispense gas up to your $60 limit. Or, you know, if you only put in 55, well, that's okay. Fine. But if you don't have, if you say you're not carrying a credit card, well, you have to go in and you pay cash, and you pay cash in advance. Of course, it's Canada, so the customer's always wrong. Well, how much gas do I need? Well, I don't know how much gas I need, you know. And I always make the point, look, you obviously don't trust me, I don't trust you. I mean, why would I give them my credit card? I mean, I've made the point here that I object on principle. Now, this is in some ways an old fight. I'll tell you why. Well, this has been the law in British Columbia for a number of years. And it all goes back to, as with the Native Indians, a failure to enforce the law. I'll explain why. About 7 or 8 years ago, there was a rather horrific case of a young white guy, and he was hired by an East Indian gas station owner to manage the station, you know, for a shift. It was actually just for a shift, and a vehicle load of Native Indians, young Indians, came in, and they accessed the pump and gassed up the vehicle and began to take off. Well, he chased after them. Being a conscientious new employee, he chased after them and grabbed at the vehicle and somehow got caught and was dragged. And even though he was screaming and screaming, he was dragged for about 5 miles. Well, you can imagine, you know, he died, of course. He was a hamburger. Well, his parents were justifiably grief-stricken. And so eventually there was the trial of the Native Indian driver, and he was found guilty of, I believe, manslaughter. Then came sentencing. The sentencing was a further joke. Because he is a native, he gets what's called the native discount. And what that means is, the fact that he's a native gets taken into consideration at his sentencing. And you know, this is totally goes against any notion of equality. It's totally entirely racial. Now, can you imagine what it would be like, at least, you know, in politically correct countries, if the rule was, if you're white, you know, let's say the normal sentence would be a year. If you're white, you get 6 months. Well, that's the way it is with what's called the native discount. On the mere basis that the person is Indian, he gets a reduced sentence or alternative sentence. In some cases, people who've committed violent crimes are sentenced to a healing lodge, which is basically a bit of an Indian mumbo jumbo, and they're soon back on the street. And that's because of a history of colonialism, and you know, the usual claptrap. A priest friend of mine once said, long time ago, when somebody was complaining about this or that, things are tough all over. Yeah, I mean, like, everybody has a sad story in their background. And Indians are not the only people who may have had, who may or may not have had, tough backgrounds. Anyway, the driver got a very much reduced sentence. I think, if memory serves me correctly, it was 5 years. Well, that got appealed, and finally he ended up with 3 years. Well, because he'd spent some time in jail, and because he got time and a half for time in jail, he ended up actually, after the trial, spending very, very little time in jail. Well, the parents were devastated. A very well-meaning young guy, his first day on the job, is like snatched from him by a heartless person, and who in the end gets very, very little punishment, but partly because he's an Indian. You know, Canada is seriously messed up. The parents, in grief, complained to the legislature and so on. Now, you understand the grief. I understand the sorrow, but it's like A does hurts you, so I'm going to go out and punish C. So in the end, what the government did was say, okay, well, we'll make sure this never happens again. You have to pay in advance. So everybody gets punished. And at the time, I complained to gas station owners. I had some frank discussions with them. I said, well, wait a second. Every gas station has video cameras, right? Yeah, most do. I said, well, okay, somebody comes along and gasses up his pickup truck and takes off, and he's stiffed you for $100. Why don't you just, you may well have seen the license, if you haven't, just take a quick look at the video and call the police and say he was headed down, Highway 97 in this or that direction, and won't the RCMP, go looking for him, chase after him, and arrest him? Oh, well, no. I said, well, why? Why not? Well, it's basically petty crime. It's the dollar value isn't worth enough. And I thought, so the problem here is lack of enforcement. Though those cops are probably somewhere down Highway 97 sitting behind a radar box, revenueing. That is, try to stop, catch you for going a few miles over the speed limit, and lay a big fine on you, and so on. And so the problem is failure to enforce the law. But even that doesn't entirely solve the problem. Because while you may have to pay for your gas in advance, you can go into the gas station. One of the ways they make a lot of money is selling overpriced junk food. Chocolate bars and potato chips and pop and the like. What's to stop you from scarfing up a few pocketfuls of these and taking off? Well, actually, nothing's to stop you, and it's the same old problem. The problem is failure to enforce the law and privileged people. Well, anyway, back to my issue. There's a sign on the door saying, "Knock hard or knock," and if we don't hear you, knock hard to let you in. So, in other words, if I don't have a credit card and I actually want to buy your product, the gasoline, I've got to knock as if I'm some sort of beggar to be allowed in. So I actually confronted the person behind the counter and said, "What is this? It's really hostile." She said, "Well, you don't understand. We live right across the street from a wet house." So I asked her to repeat it, wet house. I didn't quite get it, a wet house, okay. What is it? Well, she said, they're actually called compassion houses. compassion houses. But what they are is are basically dispensaries for drugs. They have needles and drugs. These are for supposedly recovering drug addicts. And she says, you wouldn't believe the type of people these are. They come over across the street here. They're stoned. And she said, you wouldn't believe the problems we have with stealing and so on. So I thought, okay, so the government imposes these people in a busy neighborhood, and they make nuisances of themselves, or worse. So I was asking a person who knows a fair deal about the drug scene what's going on, and this person said to me, once they get high, they feel this incredible need for sugar. And so they come across to the gas station to buy or steal, sodas or chocolate bars or things like that, and make a nuisance of themselves. And I thought, it's so typical of our society that we have these problems because of the failure to enforce the law. It's failure to enforce the law. It's just like the native railway blockades that we've been fighting in Canada for the past couple of weeks. And the problem goes on. And yesterday, Monday, the Ontario Provincial Police began to remove the main native blockade of a key east-west railway line just outside Belleville, Ontario, on the Mohawk Reserve at Tiendanega. Okay, good for them. And they arrested 10 people. Okay, even better. There have been some other blockades that are set up. One was very close to where I live, just on the outskirts of Hamilton, Ontario. To the best of my knowledge, that has not yet been removed. Instead, many commuters were massively inconvenienced yesterday and today. Just today, another railway line that runs through the what used to be the Stockyards district of Toronto set up, and the police are removing that. I think there should be absolutely no question about it. There should be absolutely no question about it. The minute the railway line is blocked, or a key bridge, or a major road, the police should move in with no questions asked. Clear the track. Clear the road. Clear the bridge. This is a direct order. If you disobey, you will be arrested. And handcuff them. You know, it's got to be automatic. That's what real enforcement is. No more privileges for or special treatment for natives. And not all these people are natives. Some of these are environmental crazies and the like, of people who simply want to shut down a modern economy. These are haters of the fossil fuel industry and so on. Now, a rather mischievous line of reasoning has crept in. And I've seen this in several articles in the past couple of days, that those people who are asking for enforcing the law are simplistic or are really reactionary, and you've got to scratch your head and say, wait a sec, what do you mean simplistic or reactionary? We're not asking for anything unusual, but enforcing the law. The law says that railway tracks should be kept clear. They're private property. You can't trespass on them or block rail traffic. And similarly with roads and bridges. They are public access for transportation for the movement of goods, services, and people. This isn't mysterious law. This isn't some sort of bizarre discriminatory law. This is how we function as a society. For instance, there is a right to protest, to assemble and protest, and generally you don't need a permit to do that unless you're asking to temporarily, let's say, block a street or something. And the idea is if you parade up and down a sidewalk, provided you allow people to pass by, and that's okay. You've got a right to march back and forth and chant slogans and wave your signs or hand out literature, as long as you don't block the sidewalk. And that's perfectly fair. That's how a civilized, modern society should operate. Well, the what has been allowed to happen is that the Indians, and this goes back to almost 20 years, have been given carte blanche. They occupy, they block a railway line, as they did near Sarnia, Ontario, a few years ago, in trying to get attention for some Indian thing at some other end of the province. And the police bring him Tim Hortons coffee instead of saying, okay, guys, you make your point, or you make your point by protesting somewhere else, but you can't block the railway line. But we have not enforced it. And then, for the better part of 2.5 weeks, the out-of-control Mohawk warriors block this main railway line that essentially is the main transportation for goods to much of eastern Canada and Quebec. So it's not just over 80,000 passengers who were prevented from traveling. It's hundreds of millions of dollars of goods and parts that are being shipped to markets, usually through the seaports of Montreal or Halifax, or parts that are being sent to factories for the assembling of other things. In a modern interrelated and dependent economy, we are fantastically reliant upon railways. In fact, I've got to say, I learned a lot in the past couple of weeks about just how reliant we are. Well, anyway, until Monday, nothing was done about this blockade. Finally, the OPP moved in and removed it. The police in other parts of Canada have, in some cases, removed blockades and arrested people who resisted. In other cases, they didn't. But anyway, the argument is this. Well, you don't understand. The law has to be enforced sensitively in terms of cultural sensitivity. Yeah, nobody is saying that we should bring in the tanks and machine gun people blockading a road. No, we're not calling for Tiananmen Square, but we're asking for that people who break the law be arrested or be moved on and prevented from continuing to break the law. Well, the natives have long-term grievances and they have unequal access to publicity and so on. I wouldn't agree with that thesis, but it's put forth by a man named Andrew Coyne, who's a long-term writer for the National Post. His argument seemed to be cut them a lot of slack because they're trying to make their point. You know, they have every right to make their point, but not by blocking a railway line. Well, and then if the police move in and arrest them, there could be a backlash among the natives who are divided. Well, the natives are divided. The ones occupying the railway tracks and other places are radicalized natives, some of whom do not recognize Canadian sovereignty. So they'll do what they want because they think they're the supreme law of the land. And if we enforce the law, it might alienate more moderate natives. Well, the point is that arrests and enforcement have to be done intelligently. I totally agree. But the option, non-enforcement is not an option. Why should they, no matter what their cause is, be allowed to block traffic and to damage? In fact, the goal, according to some of the signs, is to shut down the Canadian economy. Nobody's going to be allowed to do that. And while I certainly agree that law enforcement's got to be intelligent force used only to the degree required, it must be made clear that the law prevails and that natives are not sovereign in Canada. They're Canadians like others. They must obey the law the same as others, just as the law protects them. I'd be absolutely appalled at the number of talking heads, lawyers and people from the Native Studies industry who've been on TV or in the newspapers the past couple of days pursuing this, I think, bizarre line that enforcing the law is somehow colonialist or imperialist. In fact, it's only the law that gives natives any protection. If we didn't have laws, we could simply do whatever we wanted to whomever we wanted. And I'm not quite sure that's what these people would like. Anyways, that argument goes on. And now I'm reading the news from today. We've got an incident in Toronto where the radicals and probably mostly environmentalists have blocked another railway line, but the police are moving in, and that's good. Here's the story just off the wires. Police move in on anti-pipeline blockaders in Toronto. Around 8 p.m., that'd be Eastern Standard Time, on Tuesday, police moved in on blockaders who were blocking the main railway tracks. There's some pictures there and so on. Some of the blockaders are harassing an independent journalist. An anti-pipeline blockade was established in Toronto near the corner of Jane and Dundas at the end of workday on Tuesday. Police were quick to respond and are currently facing off against the blockaders. Police took some blockaders off the tracks, but others remain on the tracks, demanding an indigenous liaison. Yeah, this is more of the special privileges. We're special. We're natives. I mean, it's hard to know whether they are natives, but even if they are, don't need a liaison. You're blocking the tracks. Get off. And if you don't get off, we'll arrest you. The blockade was set up by a Toronto group, Rising Tide Toronto, and was one of a few blockades that prevented thousands of people from getting home from work. You know, I would like to see the angry commuters storm out of their cars or block trains and go and physically confront and remove these anarchists. The majority has to strike back. Now, of course, I can just hear the rapid intake of breath from the politically correct and the do nothing elite of our country. You can't take the law in your own hands. Well, no, that's not desirable. If you people would do what you're supposed to do, and that's enforce the law, right? I want to thank one of my new Twitter friends named Mandy. And Mandy has sent me this item. It's not very happy item. It's a Christian preacher. He's arrested for preaching. He's arrested for being a Christian. Now, does this occur in Iran? Or Pakistan, perhaps? No, in Scotland. Police in the United Kingdom are incredibly politically correct and leftist. Here's the incident. The preacher is saying, "I'm a sinner." A very heavy Scots accent. Here comes the police. Here comes two police.
Stop it, please.
A man and a woman?
Stop him!
Be quiet.
I've got it off.
The policewoman tells him to be quiet. He's a Christian preacher. Not blocking the sidewalk. There he is, handcuffed with his hands behind his back.
If you're a Christian nation, if you're a Christian or a backsliding Christian, now is the time to lift up your voice. Now, to tyranny. The thing I take away of freedom of speech.
And that is something that's sorely lacking in Britain today, freedom of speech. In fact, how that country has declined is enough to make all of those who always admired Britain to a large extent, many of us who were British or partly British, it's enough to make you weep. And part of this is that the United Kingdom has essentially become poisoned with cultural Marxism. And those values that used to be absolutely fundamental, bedrock to the British people, have been bleached out of much of the establishment, the elite, and much of the society. That respect for freedom of speech, that respect for eccentricity, you know, and a society that respects eccentricity, that respects individualism, is a healthy society. And you know, it's not just a matter of guaranteeing other people's rights. It's actually good for society. I'll tell you why. It's good because we often get new ideas from our eccentrics. People are just a little unusual. Maybe they look at things just a little differently. Now, different doesn't necessarily mean better. You can think the earth is flat and you're probably dead wrong. But it's often from the oddball, or the one who looks at things just a little differently, that we get the inventions, the new ideas. Then people kick themselves and say, well, why didn't we think of that? That's why a healthy society needs freedom of expression and needs to cherish eccentrics. Now, you look at this guy's a preacher, and you know, he's maybe a little bit out there. Society benefits when we have people expressing themselves and stimulating others. And it's so sad to see what is happening to Britain. I kind of laugh, not laugh perhaps exactly, but as I grew up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, I would run into many English people who were ever so proud of being English, even though England was desperately poor after the Second World War. And they were very proud of themselves. We beat the Jerrys, or the Germans. Well, it's not entirely clear they beat the Germans, but yes, Germany was, the National Socialist Germany was defeated. crushed at the end of the Second World War. But did that mean Britain won the war? Well, no. Within 20 years, as part of the agreement with Franklin Roosevelt, almost all of the British Empire was gone. Winston Churchill, that corrupted old drunk, had said he was not elected prime minister to preside over the dissolution of the British Empire. Well, that's exactly what he did. The war bled Britain dry. But it had other long-range effects. Communism prevailed in all of Eastern Europe, a mortal enemy to the West. But even more dangerous than the threat of the old Soviet Union was the internal corruption by communism. But when the wall fell in 1991, I believe, in 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell and essentially East European communism collapsed, we had defeated economic communism, you know, the theories of Karl Marx. Economic communism had been proven over half a century to have been a massive, utter, total, catastrophic failure. However, its evil cousin, cultural Marxism, which plots our destruction, the destruction of Europeans, of Christians, of traditional families, became in many ways the religion of much of our academe. So at the very time that economic communism was being chucked into the dustbin of history, cultural communism was prevailing in the West. And so we look at England today, a land that's overrun by third world immigrants, where free speech is an endangered commodity. And you have to ask, well, you thought you won the Second World War. What did you win? Taking the extreme position that supposing Germany had won the war and Britain had somehow become a protectorate or would basically have to have a government that would cooperate with National Socialist Germany. What would have been the internal changes? Would your population have been changed? Would you have had hordes of Muslims coming in? Would the city of London be now majority non-white? Well, actually, not at all. I doubt Germany wanted to settle England. In fact, they wanted to form an alliance so Britain could continue to run its empire overseas and Germany would have something of a free hand on the continent. They've become actually allies. But even if it wasn't quite as allies, what sort of changes would a National Socialist Germany have imposed on Britain? One doubts that the rights to free speech would have been curtailed as they are today. People going to jail for the non-violent expression of their political views. A religious preacher stopped on the street, handcuffed and arrested. And incidentally, this is a video, and you'll have to rely on my description. He wasn't blocking the sidewalk. It wasn't quite clear even what he was arrested for. Perhaps the vague charge of creating a disturbance. But most of all, the catastrophic demographic invasion of Britain would not have occurred had Britain lost the Second World War. Now, I know it's always a bit of a challenge playing the what-if game historically. but the what-if shows that the clear results of what we do know is that Britain is demonstrably worse off today than they were before the Second World War.
You have to cry for what Britain has lost, and that's having won the war. I put "one" in quotation marks. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I'm going to play a couple of tunes. Hope you like this. This is Merle Haggard, of course, and I love this song. It just expresses his great patriotism, and it's too bad that he didn't live to see the triumph of Donald Trump, because I'm sure the sentiments he expresses are precisely what he believes. He was a great patriot. And this is Merle Haggard and America First, which we'll hope to have up here once we manage to suppress this African ad. Cute as it might be. First, I'm going to play another tune that kind of along the same lines, and this is a song by a lady with a lot of spirit, and this is Gretchen Wilson, called "Politically Uncorrect."
On my way.
With an assist in there from Merle Haggard.
You would not.
And this is "Politically Uncorrect." Actually, I think that's a made-up name. Name, it's actually politically incorrect, but this is Gretchen Wilson, and with an assist by Merle Haggard, "Politically Uncorrect." That was a song with also quite a good message to it, I think. politically.
Must come down.
A trip to the grocery store or a tank of gas. It's a family farm that's been in the family for over 100 years being sold.
They're concerned about the violence and the death.
Seems like I have, you know, less money to spend
another
on
another deadly day in Iraq is 11 U.S. soldiers.
It is a funny country.
I'm for the low man on the totem pole. And I'm for the underdog. God bless his soul. And I'm for the guys still pulling third shift. And the single mom raising her kids. And I'm for the preachers who stay on their knees. And I'm for the sinner who finally believes. And I'm for the farmer who dirt on his pants. And the soldiers who fight for this man.
Gretchen Wilson with Politically Uncorrect. Here's a medley of songs with Boxcar Willie, another great entertainer from the 1980s.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Roy Acuff is 82 years old this fall. He still gets on the stage every Friday and Saturday night on the Grand Ole Opry. But he was off for 5 months recently, and I told him, I said, sure glad to see you back, King, because I'm getting tired carrying you. He said, I hope somebody always does the Wabash Cannonball. I said, sir, if I outlive you, I'll always do the Wabash Cannonball.
Boxcar Willie and the Wabash Cannonball. There was another great duo by two of the great singers who moved on. Possum, George Jones, and Merle Haggard. And this is The Way I Am. George Jones and Merle Haggard. Great duo by two really great singers. Hope you like it.
I just got to say something here before I do anything, Merle. I've got to say what a thrill this is to be on stage as the old Ryman with Merle Haggard. My favorite singer since Hank Williams Sr. And I mean it with all my heart. But the main thing, we're on stage tonight for real country music. Wish I was down on some
I'm just dreaming. What are we gonna do now?
Can you leave that about that theme? We didn't rehearse it.
You didn't. We didn't rehearse what?
Yesterday, why?
Yesterday's wine. We're aging with time. Not yesterday's wine.
Oh,